building to a new prosperity or simply the new old? To be perfectly honest, I'm not quite sure how to intro this show because there is so much ground to cover. Given the imperative of things needing to be addressed in our world right now, this very minute, something like the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which I knew nothing about, but which will be explained by our guest later because now I do know about it. But there's the pandemic. There's the acceleration of the burden of climate change. It's accelerating. And if you're in Tucson, you know that 112 is not normal, and 100 at 10 o'clock at night either. A slow erosion of our economy and the need to introduce much greater levels of justice. Think about it, everybody. Press pause on your big brain. It begs the question, are we doing enough? Or are we merely spinning our economic wheels? And why are we not building our future? This is not going to be a Debbie Downer show, trust me. So stay with me for some answers from someone more than qualified to answer many of them, or at least share his well-informed thoughts. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Impact Earth Climate Reality. And please, everybody, join me in welcoming Skip Leitner. Skip is a repeat guest, an overall amazing human being. He has become my friend, and I have dubbed him a world-renowned hybrid, an internationally recognized and sought-after economist, and someone with a rock-solid understanding of how economics and climate science are inextricably bound. Skip is an international resource economist who leads a team of consultants, the Economic and Human Dimensions Research Associates based in Tucson, Arizona. He is the past president of the Association of Environmental Studies and Sciences, an independent interdisciplinary professional association in higher education. And until very recently, he was also a senior economic research fellow for Russia's largest university system, the Russian Presidential Academy of National Economy and Public Administration. And everybody, the list really does go on. And if you want to find out more about him, as we say in our house, just freaking Google it, because you'll find him light up the screen, because I did, just to see if there was anything I missed. So Skip, it really is great to have you back with us. You can tell I'm really excited about the show. And we're going to be talking about, as we know what Kelly's son says, big brain stuff. And I hope you're ready for it, because I am.
Well, we're starting to ask the right questions finally. So ready to go, ready to go. Good to hear your voice, Pina.
So let's start with something I really did have to do my big brain homework on. The example you've used in conversation with me about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, I Googled it, read about it. So right out of the opening sentence was, four figures in the book of Revelation who symbolize the evils to come at the end of the world. And I thought, whoa, dude, I hope Skip's not there yet, but talk us about what it means that it is four horses. They each mean something. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that and then be honest, how close are we?
Ooh, the good news is there's huge opportunity to put those horsemen on a different path and to pull our economy, our social, environmental well-being and a smarter and more robust and sustainable manner if we stop and ask the questions and stop and demand a little bit more of ourselves in the way of building that future you're talking about. So, yeah, I think you laid it out very nicely, Gina. We've got the pandemic, obviously. Our world, our social, economic being has pushed into the ecosystem so much it's pushed into the pandemic world. I remember talking to some physicians 7-8 years ago who are in this field saying, we're not prepared. We're not putting enough in the way of skilled people at work. And we don't have the resources to really handle anything like the viruses or a pandemic. And they were right. We weren't really paying attention, but we've got the wherewithal at this point to respond if we begin stepping back and making those choices, not just spending money, but investing in people, investing in new technologies, new infrastructure, and new ways of doing things. So the pandemic's the first of the horsemen, but we've got right there, and you've already said it, climate change. We got Colorado with wildfires that shut down Interstate 70 for 5 straight days now, and just last month we had the Bighorn fire here in the Catalina foothills where we live. So those are examples, and we've got drought conditions everywhere. The climate burden is growing, and the evidence is clear. It's there. It's very pronounced. At the same time, our economy is slowly eroding out from under us in ways that we've not been paying attention. Our population is growing, for sure, but the per capita GDP, the per capita income, the rate of improvement is slowing drastically compared to the 50s, 60s, and even 1970s. And that means we're going to have a smaller economy than we anticipate, which may not be so bad from a climate standpoint, but that means we're going to have less income and less investment, fewer dollars to support education, fewer dollars to support healthcare, unless we really take a step back and provide those kinds of investments we need, not just merely spending money to put food on the table, but to create a more robust and more sustainable infrastructure of the future. And then, yeah, the whole issue of justice, it's pretty stunning. The inequities that exist in our society, the wealth of the top 0.1% versus the bottom 20%, it's creating some problems that people can't really deal with their lives in ways that allow them to enjoy as opposed to having to pay the price. So whether it's racial justice, whether it's income justice, and we hear it in the forms of environmental justice as well, something we definitely need to pay attention to. We're at that point in our social and economic well-being. All of these have to be addressed, and they can only be addressed in a way that smartly invests and not just spend money, invests in our future, invests in our technology, and move us ahead. It's a hard thing to wrestle with, but the opportunity is really there. That's, I think, the opportunity is there if we make the choices.
So, you know what I want to say? I want to say, like, what I did when I was a kid, like, okay, Skip, do you swear? Because you better mean it. And it's like, that's what happens to me now, where one day I'm thinking, this is freaking awesome. This is the new paradigm. The old one is just crumbling. And then other days, I mean, I am so concerned about the post office. It's like, who ever thought I'd have to worry about the post office? And I saw a post the other day on Facebook from a person I really have a lot of, you know, love, admiration, and respect for. And she said, I don't know what to do to save the post office. And I guess when you're in a country that feels like the potential for it being conquered, which is one of those horses, conquest is the white horse. I'm going to be like your expert on this, your Wikipedia on the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But I care deeply about the right to vote. And so I don't want to get off on that tangent because you have a lot of other things that we need to talk about. But that's one example of, we have to have hope and we can't give up, and we have to keep spending our $5 or our $10 or signing petitions or get involved with Vote Save America. So, and I also want us all to press pause because everybody knows that I love interviewing you. I love chatting with you. When we get on the phone, we have to at least block out an hour, even if it's a 15-minute call, because there's so much to cover. But I was thinking about this. We had our last interview, I believe, was in February. Look at what happened since then. When you and I were already saying, you know, we got to do this, we got to do that, this has to change, we have to be asking this questions. So we all know the negative. There was no, the Black Lives Matter had not blown up, which thank goodness it has. And the pandemic was a whisper. You know what I mean? Now it's now it's paralysis in many cases. And so many of those things. So I want to ask you, what kind of questions should we be asking? You gave me a quote, we shape the world by the questions we ask. So what are the right questions? What are your some of your thoughts on that? And how help us get a mindset for helping us to build new levels of prosperity?
No, really good, Gina. Exactly right. And we shape the world by the questions we ask. It was physicist John Wheeler who in the 70s was responding to questions from reporters, how the heck are physicists coming up with some of the things that we now take for granted, like the internet, for example. And that was exactly his response. We shape the world by the questions we ask. And we're at that point where, yes, we see some huge difficulties, At the same time, I'm really amazed at the number of people coming forward with really good ideas that are enthusiastic and that are seeing this as a moment where we can pivot and move into that new prosperity if we make the choices of people that lead us, if we make the choices of productive investment, if we make the choices of really providing the education, the deployment of a revitalized workforce, we have the opportunity to turn this around. We're at that pivot point, but the choices absolutely have to be made. We have to start trusting each other a bit more, collaborating a bit more, and then, as I say, making those investments in people and technologies, infrastructure.
So there isn't a set of questions. We have to keep questioning. And I think my mindset around the questions are, you know, it comes down to not just what's in the news, but our personal lives, our communities, and the global economy. So how can I contribute to my local economy? How can I help it be more resilient? And we're doing a lot in our community, and I read a lot about what's being done in other communities throughout the United States. And the global economy, I mean, there are days when I think I really can't have much of an impact on that, but at least I'm asking questions about what I can do because it's personal and it's going to impact, you know, all of our lives for years to come. So what do you think some of the questions an individual should be asking at this critical time in the history of the United States?
Well, one big question is, are we going to be so worried about that thing we call debt that prevents us from creating the investments that move us ahead? Yes. We're going to have to borrow. Yes, we're going to have to create a new flow of money. As long as those are invested in the new infrastructure, a new group in, that's just arisen that I've had a chance to collaborate with called Rewiring America. Their argument is over the next 20 years that we can revamp our economy, move into an electrified system, whether electric vehicles or whether better air conditioning and heating and lighting systems in our homes and our offices, whether we have better information technologies that allow us to real-time adjust how it is we use energy, water, food in more productive ways. Rewiring America is an organization people may want to check out. I don't agree with everything they've put out there. For example, they want to move to a bit more nuclear than I would like to do. Oh. But the idea is a good idea of how we need and how we can provide upfront investment that generate returns, and I'm happy to say they used a tool that I created for them on employment that can create millions of new jobs, net jobs, as a result of that smart use of money, worrying about the returns and investment rather than necessarily about the growing debt. So that's the first question. Are we going to be so absorbed in the issue of indebtedness, or are we going to really focus on this whole prosperity as anchored by productive investment, both in people and in technologies in our infrastructure? I think that's the first step forward. It's not something we can do individually. In other words, yes, I've already got LED electric lighting in my homes, LED lamps that are very low wattage, but that's not going to take us very far if all of us do that. It'll be a first step. It's going to really take us as a society, as an economy, to together make that investment very large scale. To give you an example, we're probably a $20 trillion economy before the pandemic. That's the gross domestic product. But our infrastructure, our buildings, our parks, our water treatment facilities, our roads, our bridges, probably more like $70 trillion. We have to probably invest at least 1 year's GDP equivalent to upgrade all of the existing infrastructure, even as we then provide for new homes, new buildings, new jobs, new factories, what have you. That's the scale of effort, and that's going to have to take us as a society. Not any one thing individuals can do, but every individual can support that idea, which enables Congress, which enables business, which enables communities to move together in a very forward manner.
So that's a great answer, because underpinning of all of that response is get involved, get awake, start asking yourself the big brain questions, and it's going to take a lot of big brains to do this. So I have a question somewhere in here, trust me. There really is not a lack of money. That's such a false construct.
Correct.
Amazon has lots of money. Jeff Bezos, Microsoft. I mean, my brain is flooding with examples of multi-billionaires. I mean, Oprah, there's plenty of money. So directing that, I think a lot of the forward-thinking people, and I have read a lot lately about what Microsoft is doing to not only be net zero in a very short amount of time, but to do equitable energy. I was like, Skip, I was so excited. They care about the unequal distribution of renewable energy in, you know, I call them rich white people neighborhoods. They want to get the distribution of affordable and renewable energy into at-risk communities. So there is a lot of hope, and there really is. So let's go off a little bit, because one of the things that gives me hope is that I know you have been contacted by, maybe, I don't know, Chuck Schumer, I'm just going to talk about him. He has people out there. And I know in three different occasions, I have friends who have been contacted by Schumer's office to talk about literally rebuilding our infrastructure and how do we get there. So is that one of the things that gives you hope? I know that November 3rd is going to be the most important days, maybe in my life. But is that one of the things that gives you hope that there are people, Republicans and Democrats,
yes,
that are thinking about how we get from here to there and in the face of all of these four horsemen?
Yeah, no, spot on. Yes, I hear a lot of conversation at higher levels of Congress thinking exactly along these lines. In fact, I know that Schumer's office has been in touch with my colleagues from Rewiring America, for example, and they've been exchanging ideas. The House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis just submitted a report last month, it was, suggesting that if we clean up our air, if we move towards renewables, efficiency, electric technologies, the cumulative effect of avoided climate damages and air pollution health costs be on the order of $8 trillion of net benefit to the U.S. economy. And those are the same numbers I'm finding in my own studies, the same magnitude of opportunities. So, yes, I'm beginning to hear a lot of people resonate at that level and beginning to suggest those kinds of responses. And yes, November 3rd is probably going to be the pivot. And everybody needs to ask questions. Everybody needs to shake down some ideas, but with a focus on making sure that we come together on November 3rd so we can actually put this into action.
And you really hit on something there with the kind of questions we should be asking, because I don't think it's top of mind for everyone to say, how is climate change impacting our debt related to health, our health-related deaths, our health-related illnesses because of climate change? That's a big, bold question, and it requires some research to answer. And of course, you could quiz me. I better know the answer to that after 12 years. But for me, that's part of what your message is the intersection of the economy with climate change. It's what you know, and it's what you have made me think about so much.
Well, so yeah, and let me give you an example. The National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration has been tracking what we could call climate statistics, climate disaster statistics. In the 1980s, we were having climate-related costs, hurricanes, droughts, fires, about $18 billion a year in today's dollars. That was the 1980s. Last 3 years, it's been up to $150 billion a year. So we've gone from 18 to 150, and by my estimate, by the year 2040, just 20 years from now, that could be over $500 billion a year and associated climate damages, whether, again, we're talking droughts, wildfires, floods, hurricanes, you name it. It is something that we need to pay attention to. The statistics are there. It bear it out. It provides a huge opportunity to benefit our communities and our larger economy if we start responding at the kinds of questions that Senator Schumer is asking, that the House Select Committee on Climate Crisis is exploring. Exactly right.
That gives me hope. And I think that there are going to be a lot of wins. And I always want to say to people, not wins for the Democratic Party, because I have my issues with a lot of the things that I think they've messed up. These wins are going to be for the future of our country and our ability to get engaged in climate adaptation and mitigation. And, you know, my son-in-law is a firefighter, and he's been in Montana for 2.5 weeks, and he doesn't know when he's coming back. And he's got a 15-month-old. So it gets up close and personal when you see that. So you and I talk about things, and I swear, Skip, from now on, I'm going to start recording our conversations, and we'll just label it Inside Edition. And then another show I'd like to do with you is one where I would not have to worry about my language, and we would have that one be a censored show. Because, I mean, I listen to those Pod Save America guys and Vote Save America guys, and I'm like, I so want to be on that show so I don't have to be careful. But here I am.
There you are.
Let's talk about, in the big concept of people and companies and organizations' fear of failure, there's a lot about the making the old new again. I see that. I get it.
Yes.
But there are new things, new products, new ideas, and some of you, if you're not failing, you're not doing anything. That's how I feel. It's like the only people who never fail are people that play it safe. So how do we create a society where people have a lot of answers but don't have the opportunity? How do we help them find their platform, their voice, their audience? Because I'm telling you, we're making a joke about the new car that Chapman gave me as my demo car, which is an Audi SUV, and it is like a freaking spaceship. It is, first of all, the fact that I will never have any CO2 emissions is mind-boggling, but talk about innovation and technology, but there are 14-year-olds, probably 10-year-olds, that have answers to a lot of the questions because they're asking the big brain questions. So how do we create a platform where failure is not just accepted, it's encouraged, invited, and celebrating? Is that like a dream?
Well, actually, if we talk to almost any scientist whatsoever, whether medical doctors or biologists or geologists, failure is very much part of their life. Every day they go out and they may not find something. Every day they go explore and they get the wrong answer. But instead of looking as a failure, as the wrong answer or a failed experiment, it's a learning that leads to the new outcome. So one of the things I think we need to understand is, let's look at the big ideas. I'll give you an example. You talk about your new car, which sounds delightful. I look forward to having a ride at some point.
I can't wait in the after times when we can sit 2 feet away from each other.
Yeah, exactly. At the same time, if I were to ask people what the record fuel economy in the world for a research vehicle might be, an internal combustion engine, for example, people might say 100 miles per gallon or 200 miles per gallon. But that's because we are so constrained by our day-to-day view of what we look at when we see cars on the road. We think, well, we're at 25 miles a gallon now. Maybe we can get 4, 5, 8, 10 times better. But the record fuel economy at the Shell Eco Marathon in 2004, a car out of France by students, young people, if you will, 10,705 miles per gallon, Gina. And I've got a colleague in the United Kingdom at the University of Cambridge. He and his students, young people again, that in 2013 built an electric car powered by solar, electricity made by the sun, photovoltaics, almost 13,000 miles per gallon. Why haven't we been able to move past 25 miles per gallon as the average now in the United States would be? Because we have been fearful to make any changes. We've been so caught up in the day-to-day that we haven't looked over our shoulder, asked questions of each other. And as a result, we've been emitting more and more carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere because of those huge inefficiencies of our cars. So failure is something that is all science experience, but they take it as a step forward. And the businesses, for every 10 businesses that start up, one-third of them will be gone in the first 5 years, and two-thirds of them will be gone in 10 years. They're failing. But instead of treating it as a failure, if we can learn through our education system and learn in conversation with each other and learn by the votes we cast how to understand those failures as learning and opportunities to move on to the next success, I think that's the step we're going to have to move. if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. But here's another one that just throws me a curveball. When I first started Mrs. Green's World, which was over a decade ago, I cannot believe that. In the very beginning, I interviewed one of the producers, and I believe the name of the movie was Gas Hole. And it was really a great movie. And it was about, and my husband knew all about it because he lived in Deming, how a car drove from El Paso to Deming. And you know me and getting all these facts right. I have to have them right in front of me. But it was like a gallon of gas. I am not kidding. What happened to his life, and it wasn't even like, nobody even argued about it. He got threatened. The patent that was in the congressional, you know, the office, you know.
U.S. Patent Office?
Yeah. Patent Office.
Okay.
Disappeared. I kid you not. He ended up leaving it alone because there were black cars pointed, you know, parked out his people in unmarked vehicles, parked out of his house. He received threats. And there was much more to it than that. So do we still have to be afraid of the people with the money that are making the money from things like oil going in and destroying some of those dreams? Because I got news for you. There's probably not a lot of gas and oil companies that wants a car to get 300 miles a gallon, let alone 10,000 or 100,000. So there's fear of failure. Do you think there's an overlay of fear for some people that come up with these bright, brilliant ideas? Or is that like my conspiracy theory? I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but sometimes I think, yeah, if I were you, I'd be scared too.
Well, yeah, we've got companies like BP, the old British Petroleum, now simply known as BP, and following the disaster in the Gulf of Mexico 10 years ago, they begin slowly moving towards more and more low-carbon, no-carbon, renewable energy technologies as their investments. And they've recently announced that they're going to decarbonize their business. And part of the reason they can do that is they're changing their business model. They're changing the way they earn income, the way they pull revenue into their business. So a lot of what we have to think about are new business models where we generate income based on value-added services, rather than the sale of a gallon of gasoline or some kilowatt hours of electricity from our utility. So the services that are provided, not the commodity that's sold. And BP is beginning to move in that kind of a direction. And we're beginning to see pension funds beginning to look for more active, low carbon, no carbon investments that will provide revenue. So an existing business like BP used to get its money on the sale of oil, but today is moving on the services it provides that are low to zero carbon type services that they're still able to earn revenue. So it's going to have to be a shift, not only in the way we as a society move to the future, Democrat, Republican, it's our future that we're voting on November 3rd. So we want to vote for the people that open up these opportunities and shift the business models into ways of pulling revenue from services we provide that are helpful to both the business and to the clients or customers at the same time. It's going to require a shift, but it's that kind of shift we're going to do that eliminates or reduces the fear of failure because you know other ways of having your income, other ways of maintaining the livelihood of your business.
So here's hope. When you answer like that to me, I have hope because I go to the Green Biz Conference every year up in Phoenix, and I don't know what's going to happen in February. They're probably going to do it remotely, which really saddens me because the networking in between sessions is really critical, and you know that as well as anybody. But they have big dogs, like the big dogs, at these conferences, and to a one, they understand that to build solid economies,
right,
is the way to go for their companies, for their profit, for their earnings per share. You cannot just build a society and companies on greed because, you know, when you think back historically, every power, like Rome wasn't built in a day, but it sure collapsed pretty fast when the rich took care of themselves and they didn't take care of the people that were providing them with their food and those riches. So to me, we have lots of historical examples, and I'm with you. I feel like a lot of the really big dogs with lots and lots of money have brilliant people leading the charge to make it a more resilient, socially just, and sustainable planet. I see a lot of that hope. It, of course, does not make a lot of the nightly news because we're too busy looking at what someone in the White House said on Twitter, which is so annoying to me. Let's talk about the big deals.
Yeah, well, you make a good point, and it's very much with BP America, the oil company again, and I like the way they phrase it. Again, it's not that I agree with everything they're proposing to do, but it's an indication, reimagining energy. Instead of business as usual, we have to reimagine the future. We can no longer afford business as usual approaches. That means we've got to step back and say, all right, who is it that's going to help us as a community do that job? And those are the people we want to vote for in the election. Who is it that's going to help us rework our investments? And that's the companies that, whether it's the investment community, the energy companies, or the engineering consulting businesses in the world, how are they going to be able to reimagine our future? And what are the products that are going to help get us there? And how can we support them? Again, as you said, the big brain stuff that we're asking of ourselves, and that together we're working through our vote on November 3rd.
Yeah, well, my schizophrenia kicks in when I think about, you know, the pandemic and the impact. And I am no longer a big football fan since I watched Will Smith's movie about the impact of football on men's brains, about big brains. Mm-hmm. So I kind of lost interest because when the helmets hit, I get queasy and I think, why are you doing this? You could be watching something on PBS that you enjoy. That being said, I'm not against football. Okay, I'm not actively saying, let's kill football. But for our community, we just had an announcement that the Pac-12 is canceling their football season. And what I immediately thought of is I could care less about the games. There are lots of people who do care, and it's going to cause millions and millions of dollars in loss to the businesses that are already hurting because of the pandemic.
Yes.
So, you know, to your point, you know, I start thinking when you have me thinking like this, well, what can we do about it here in Tucson? Can we create events that we hire these restaurants that we all love? You and I talk about it. We love, this is our favorite hotspot. Everybody wants to have a Cheers.
Right.
Because I like it when people say, hi, Gina, when I go in the restaurant. Who doesn't?
That's right.
So to me, the question becomes, we're not going to get football this season, but what can we do? And it makes me think it might be something I'll get involved in, talking to the people that I know to say, what can we do to help not just the small business restaurants, but the people that, you know, provide the supplies, all the students that work at these events, that's their livelihood. So there's, you know, it's the, I have this vision in my head, Skip, we might want to do something this, where the volcano has erupted, mm-hmm. but all the stuff is still up in the air. All the stuff is still up in the air. It hasn't started rippling down, and the lava is not fully, you know, out of the volcano.
Yes.
So
yes.
Anyway, I really do love talking with you. So I want to go to another example. Okay.
Go.
You get me going, and you know that. So you sent me some notes, or I took some notes, or some notes magically appeared when we were talking about how much are we limited by our thinking, our current understanding. And I want to read this because you did write this. Trust me, I did not. For example, Nobel physicist Richard Feynman gave an amazing lecture in 1959. I just want to point out that I was 9, so maybe I didn't hear him, about being plenty of room at the bottom, in which he postulated the possibility of storing, he postulated the possibility of storing the Encyclopedia Britannica on the head of a pin.
The entire encyclopedia, yes, yes.
Entire. So we know it's probably now half a pin. we can do that.
Yeah.
But how do we build on that knowledge to improve, to make things better and improve overall productivity and reduce the scale of materials we need? Because part of it is the first R, reduce.
Right.
Not just reuse and recycle. So how can we use that to promote our larger social and economic well-being? I mean, I ask you the big brain questions, dude. So you better have an answer for that one.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was an amazing lecture that Feynman gave. It's online. If people want to search it, Richard Feynman, plenty of room at the bottom at Caltech. But again, the idea was asking questions, stepping back and wondering what is a bigger reality that we might be engaged in. That was 30 years before IBM scientist Don Eigler, 1989, learned how to manipulate cesium atoms under a microscope to spell out the words IBM. So he was 30 years before our first ability to do that. And part of what we have to do is invest in people who can respond, who can both ask those questions and respond to those questions. We don't have enough in the world of science. We don't have enough in the world of education. We're not supporting researchers at the scale we need to do in order to create that pivot, in order to learn what it is we can do with that kind of information, with those kinds of questions being asked, the opportunities we could deliver. So that's a critical step. We need more education. We need more training. We need more skilled technicians, scientists, people that are appreciated. And if there's one group of people that are not appreciated right now, in my opinion, is teachers. I can't tell you how many teachers. My sister is a former science teacher, retired recently, and partly retired because of discouragement of the way the system treats people. So we need both more teachers, we need more people who are respected and valued, and then we need more people who are trained to ask those questions and then to provide answers for those questions. I think that's the critical step right there.
So you gave me goosebumps. That's always a big sign of success in a show, when I get goosebumps, because that answer is so spot on. And I want to just add to it a little bit.
Yes.
What that means is that we have to invest in early childhood education and having the best of the best teach those little minds and have it be equitable and socially just in terms of the people, the children we've reached, Skip.
Exactly right.
You know, I was in social services for 35 years, and this is just nonsense, because I have this thing on my wall and it says, children, invest in them. They're our future, the only future we will ever have. I mean, so when you answer that, it addresses an enormous amount of social injustice and inequitable issues. It's disgusting what we pay teachers. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And you said
it's disgusting.
Best of the best. And I would add only one thing, more of the best.
More
best
of the best.
And more of the best.
Oh.
And let me give you an interesting bit of work that's being uncovered right now. We have this evolution, the idea of the survival of the fittest. And for so long, we assumed that meant physically strong or tactically brilliant, that the strongest, the fittest would survive. But the evidence is coming out now. It's actually survival of the friendliest. The people who collaborate and cooperate more with each other are the ones more likely to survive and to fit the future outcome of a society or any given economy. I've just read a report by some scientists studying sharks. We think of the lone shark, but it turns out sharks are much more social than we imagine, and
right.
They work in groups of 20 to help each other. And we've got insects like bees that work together to create their beehive, their colony, to continue to move on to the next beehive. So one of the things I think we need to do is building on this more of the best and understanding that we actually, it's survival of the friendliest, survival of the socially connected people from the ground level, where we have now, yes, Black Lives Matter and low-income people are part of that social network. We need to pull them up to work with us together. And in that fashion, I think we have a chance to move ahead.
And I would be compromising my wolf whisperer if I don't mention wolves, because they're another one that's the big bad wolf, mm-hmm. and fear about wolves and predation and all that. And it's all bunk. It's crap, because they are so much like humans in the way that they live, operate, protect their young. I mean, you name it. So you're right. We can learn a lot from nature.
Well, and even things, getting back to education, you just reminded my colleague Jeremy Rifkin comments. He said when he was in the third grade, if he was sitting behind his friend and were to ask him, what are you putting down for number three? He would be accused of cheating. And yet we're today saying we need more collaboration, more cooperation, more sharing of information, so that testing that we did 50 years ago may no longer be as relevant, because sharing, collaborating, and understanding failure is essential to learning. We have to work together, to pull each other together, fail together, but then succeed because we're working together. And that's a critical element.
And part of, like, kind of woven in your answer is the reality that we need to work together as a global economy, not just what the United States is or is not doing. There has to be foundations of trust. And you probably know more than any guest I've had because you work so closely with Russia.
Yes.
I mean, come on, people. All Russians aren't bad people. And that spirit of cooperation, and look what it has done in the solar industry. It was really putting aside some protocols for intellectual property, where scientists got together and said, let's look at each other's notes.
Yeah.
And let's see how we can make a difference. So that's another one that you know, it's bingo.
Yeah, so right. Well, I want to tell you a story. I was in Moscow getting ready to attend a meeting, and I slipped on an icy step in Moscow going up to the meeting, and I cracked open my forehead. The nurse, as part of the system there, came out to help me. And there was a little 10-year-old boy. I've got the pictures right in front of me right now. This is from like 7-8 years ago. A little boy, a Russian boy, drew two little pictures for me on pieces of paper, one of a kitty cat and one of a horse.
Oh.
It was his way of trying to cheer me up, even as I was bleeding from my forehead. Fortunately, it wasn't serious. But those are the kinds of things we need to encourage more of, is people helping each other, sharing with each other, and collaborating, working together, and exchanging ideas and exchanging ways of doing things together. So, yes.
And you can, and many others have, and I can successfully connect the dots between the impact of severe drought, severe flooding on not just the human capital, but then that translates to our bottom line because you need a workforce. And then it creates world unrest, to say the least. It creates wars.
Right.
Climate change creates wars. So we better start figuring out how this is all one big ball of wax and it's all connected. And we all suffer or will suffer or are going to be or already have suffer as a result of it. So I have two more questions.
Go for it.
Several months ago, from our last discussion, I asked you, are we setting the stage for a hard decade or a bad century? 7 months later, how would you answer that now? What direction do you see us going in? And how loudly is the clock ticking?
Well, we're a couple of minutes to midnight in terms of the clock ticking. I can't say enough that November 3rd is going to be pivotal. We're voting and reimagining our future. If we can pull that off, and if we move towards a more electric future that is very consistent with this idea of rewiring America, building out our infrastructure, providing much more productive use of resources, as I think I've told you before, as an economy, we're about 16% energy efficient. We can move to 70-some percent energy efficient by a smarter use of that build-out of the infrastructure, rewiring America, as my colleagues are suggesting. Again, I don't agree with all that they're saying needs to be done, but the idea is a critical one. So November 3rd, voting for our future, reimagining our future, and then enabling people, whether pension funds or whether the billionaires, or whether businesses or whether communities or households, to work together.
And, you know, the thing that strikes me when you talk about that is we have proof where building infrastructure has been very successful and saved our company, our country, from complete, absolutely decimation in the Great Depression. Go to Sabino Canyon, go to a lot of parks around the country, and you see that, done by the Civilian Conservation Corps. It was real work. It was real jobs and it paid real salaries and it brought us back and strongly. So to me, you know, and I know there are just dozens of studies that show how green jobs are sustainable jobs and provide ongoing ways of supporting yourselves and creating a future for you and your family. They are sustainable, unlike going in and fracking and putting in an oil well, and then all the jobs go away once that well is in. So you answered my second question, because I was going to ask you what your call to action is, and mine's always going to be on every show from now till November 3rd, is vote.
Yeah.
And I want to add to that, and I'd love if you add to that. Every vote counts, yes. Try to get other people to vote, yes. And look at who's running for what. It's not just about who's in your Senate and who's in your House of Representatives. The White House, to me, is the number one spot we have to put our eye on. But then locally, I care deeply about juvenile justice reform and criminal justice reform. So you can believe that I was all over the Pima County attorney election. I was all over it.
Right.
And I was emailing people and I was calling people on the phone and saying, we need a change. We don't need the good old boy network. We need someone that really cares about criminal justice reform. And she won against all odds. So
Fabulous. Everybody
who's listening, vote yes. But what does that mean? Ask yourself some big brain questions about...
Well, and good comment, if I can say.
Yes.
Because a lot of the signs you see along the roads today, people trying to run for supervisors or for other offices in Tucson or Pima County, Arizona, roads and taxes seem to be the big items on those signs. No, we can't vote for roads and lower taxes any longer. We've got to vote for new investments in our community, new ways of doing things. It may require a few new tax dollars, but what people can also appreciate is those tax dollars generate bigger benefits if invested smartly. So yes, vote November 3rd for reimagining our future, for enabling people to help us all move ahead together.
And it's not dramatic to say vote like your life depended on it, because our lives do. If we don't get climate policy change pretty quickly, the number of deaths related to climate change are going to increase, the availability of clean water. I mean, last night, Skip, it was 100 degrees here at 10 o'clock at night.
Yes.
And I'm like, I got to get out of here. I can't stand this. So that's not easy either. My call to action is next. And then I want to see if you have any closing remarks before I thank you. But my call to action is for our listeners to please consider supporting Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. And my team has really gotten on me about this, that I failed to mention it. But we did get hurt somewhat from the COVID. We're trying to help the businesses that cannot support us anymore. But the bigger ask is, I know that there are thousands of people that love our podcast. They want to learn from our guests. They read our newsletters, and we could use your support. We need upgrades on our website. We need another staff person so desperately. We are the small but mighty. But just think about $5, $10, $15 a month, and you can find all that information on our website. It says, support us. And Kelly will put a link in the show notes for Skip's show. So that's my call to action. Skip, do you want to have any last words, any updates? And when am I going to get to have you back?
My only last word is just to reiterate, we said vote for your future. Vote as if our lives depend on it, because this is a serious collision of the four horsemen, both the pandemic, climate, eroding economy, and growing injustices. All of those need to be the result of a smart vote on November 3rd for every office that's on the ballot.
I can't improve on that. That's words of wisdom. Thank you, my friend. So my last word is very simple. It's just a warm, heartfelt, sincere thanks to Skip Leitner. His passion, his insights, his very big brain are making a difference for me and making a difference for the planet and all of the people on his team and all of the inhabitants of this planet. And I'm just putting it out there that I think you and I should figure out how to launch a podcast series. I even thought of a name for it, Skip. It's going to be called Big Brain Stuff.
Ooh,
and
you got me interested.
I think we should do it. And you know that we can find the money, because the money's out there. There are people that want to talk about big brain stuff. So maybe Microsoft would throw us a little few dollars, or the Gates Foundation, because it does take money to put on quality podcasts. And if you know of any big brain sponsors, have them contact me, Gina and Mrs. Green's World. So I look forward to our next discussion, my friend.
Thank you.
Enjoy the days and weeks to come. Get out of Tucson if you can, because I'm leaving tomorrow morning. And I say if I can, I'm very blessed, and I know that. And everybody can't just get out of Tucson. So I want to remember my privilege when it comes to that. So thanks, everybody. And Skip, thanks for being my friend. Thanks for being a friend of the planet.
And thanks for asking the good questions.
You help. So thanks, everybody.
Yes.
Make it a great green, sustainably lived day, week, month, year, and frickin' vote.